Hi guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast, the show dedicated to transforming your life. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Helen, and we're excited to bring you the best information on exercise, nutrition, mindset, and health. Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Podcast. And in today's episode, I'm joined once again with John Dalanak, and we talk about intensity and volume. So we start by defining what is intensity, what is volume, and then we talk about how you can progress both of these variables in your training to continue to see results. We touch a lot on what is auto-regulation and how you can use auto-regulation to determine if you should increase your volume or increase your intensity. And then we touch on our good friend cardio and its importance in our progressive overload and how we can use cardio to get stronger and to lose weight. So guys, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation with JD and myself on intensity and volume. What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Podcast. Today, I'm joined with another coach, John Dalanak. John, welcome back to the Challenge Podcast.
Thanks, mate. Good to be here.
Mate, we're going to be talking all about training and intensity and volumes, all the fun training things. But mate, I'd like to ask you to start. When someone talks to you about training intensity, you obviously lift a lot more than I do. How do you define intensity in your own training and the clients that you train?
Yeah, right. So intensity essentially is the weight that you're moving. A lot of people sort of think of intensity as like how hard you're sort of smashing it out at the gym. And yeah, that's a form of intensity, but when we speak about intensity in terms of training, the intensity is actually the load that you're lifting. So if your one rep max of, say, squat is 100 kilos and you're lifting 80 kilos, then the intensity is pretty high. It's up at about 80% of what your maximal lift is, yeah? Whereas if you're doing 50 kilos, then it's a lesser intensity and it's, you know, down towards your 50% because, you know, 50 of 100 is 50%. Yeah, so that's what intensity is in terms of training and programming, when the way I go about it and the way it is in working with weights, basically, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So then in contrast, how would you define volume then?
So volume is the total amount of work that you're doing in any one block in a training session or a, you know, a mesocycle, microcycle, whatever you're doing. So it's basically sets times reps is your volume, basically. So yeah, if you're doing 5 sets of 10, then you know you've done 50 reps or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's your volume for that particular exercise or body part or whatever you're training at the time. So yeah, that's your volume.
Yeah, I guess there's like a common debate within the fitness industry as in, should I be constantly aiming to increase my intensity or the weight that's on the bar, or should I be aiming to increase the volume? And that is for progressive overload reasons. And I think it really comes down to the goal or the output that you're trying to achieve. Commonly, we look at increasing volume for hypertrophy, and we look at increasing intensity for powerlifting or weightlifting events. But within your own personal training and then training clients yourself, do you tend to lean to one side or the other? Like, do you tend to focus on increasing volume or do you tend to focus on increasing intensity over time?
Following laws of like progressive overload and things like that, I essentially increase both over time. And until I find where a person, where they begin to fatigue, their maximal recoverable volume is what they call it, your MRV. So when you start seeing people, you know, going into the gym, like, you know, my clients, for instance, if I start them off at a certain volume, a certain intensity, over those next, say, 4 to 6 weeks, depending on the individual and their training experience and what their goals are, I will increase each week. The volume will slightly increase. The intensity will slightly increase on most exercises so that we're getting their bodies to progressively overload and adapt to those changes and get stronger, get fitter, get whatever their goal is, if that makes sense. So we're constantly making the body have to adapt and get better at whatever it's doing. And then you get to a point where you start seeing diminishing returns where they're starting to feel fatigue, they're not hitting the reps that they should, they're not completing sets properly and all that sort of stuff. They're feeling lethargic and whatnot. And then you know that you've sort of reached their maximum recoverable volume. You're getting to a point now where if you start pushing them any further, they're kind of starting to go into that overtraining mode. Do you know what I mean? You hear a lot of people talk about overtraining, but yeah, to get to that point is quite hard, but it is definitely achievable, or people do get to it. So yeah, you've got to closely monitor your client and see how they respond. And then you can kind of work out what sort of blocks that they can work in before they get a deload. And then in a deload, you reduce their volume and intensity, and it just lets them sort of let their body recover and to sort of dissipate all that stress that they've built up over those weeks, be it training stress and be it, you know, stresses everywhere else or whatever. So then you give them a deload week. Usually from that, you see that they recover really well again. They start, you know, they're just doing the movements, but at a lesser intensity, lesser volume. And then the following week, they're ready to smash the gym again. And you watch their previous numbers get smashed in the next block because they've had that recovery. And you start all over again. You slowly start bringing up that intensity, start bringing up that volume until you see that pattern occur again. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I like it. I think the answer to that would be it all depends, right? It depends on the person in front of you. And I like that you brought up all those other factors that can influence someone's ability to recover from training, because we need to really consider the person as a whole, that whole biopsychosocial approach to fitness. Because yeah, you and I and people can add training stress and training volume to their life, but then they've also got a family, they've got their careers, they've got work, they've got all the other stresses in their life that can impact their ability to recover. But, you know, before we touch on, or I guess touching on that idea of overtraining or fatigue, what are some signs that you see in people where you go, okay, maybe we'll decrease the volume this week because I can tell that you're starting to look fatigued? Like, what kind of signs do you see in people where you make that decision?
It can be a whole factor of things. It can be just the way they approach the bar. You can sort of see if someone's over it already, do you know what I mean? And, you know, either they've had a bad day, and if they've had that, they normally tell you anyway when they get to the session, they let you know, that sort of thing. Or it could be that they're just kind of like, yeah, they've had enough of that exercise. Their body's telling them, no, I don't want to get under a bar and squat that 100 kilos again because I'm stuffed, you know what I mean? So it's things like that, breakdown in technique. You watch them squat or bench press or whatever exercise they're doing, and you can just see that their form's, you know, all over the place. Their head's not in it. It's usually things like that. You just sort of see technique breaks down. They're just not into it. They're not enjoying it. And you sort of know that, okay, they've kind of reached their maximum on that. We need to find something that's more enjoyable. You know, you find the same sort of exercise is going to give similar results, but you find something different and it's so much more fun for them. Then they're like, oh, great, this is a change that I can enjoy, and they get back into the training again.
Yeah, yeah. I think for me personally, if I go to the gym and I'm one or two sets into my training and I start yawning, that's a telltale sign for me. That's it. Go home. Yeah. It's done. No more training to you. You need a deload or to reduce the training intensity or the volume. But I think some other signs would be sleep disruption. I think for some people who suffer from an increase in disrupted sleep, that could be a sign that you're starting to get into that overtraining world. And then I think just overall soreness as well. I think just that overall joint soreness or that muscular soreness is a sign that we're starting to reach that maximal recoverable volume that you kind of touched on before.
Yeah, there's so many factors, and that's where it's important to always communicate with your client. Like at the start of every session, I sort of ask them how they're feeling, blah, 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 have they slept well, blah. And you kind of start to see in this session, things start to come out. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I guess for the people listening, I think we can go through how we would judge someone to increase their volume or their intensity. So let's say someone's coming to their session and they are without giving the answer away, you know, they're coming to their session, and what kind of signs do you see in somebody that you then decide to add some weight on the bar for them or increase their intensity in their training?
If you just see that they're smashing it out like it's a warm-up, basically, yeah. If they're moving away effortlessly and, yeah, it's like there's no stress at all, then, yeah, and it sort of comes down to that RPE, which is, you know, your one way of testing where you're at with all your sets. So I can't think of
the rate of perceived exertion.
Rate of perceived exertion, exactly. So, yeah, you can sort of tell if they've got another 5 or 10 reps in the tank, then you've undershot the mark big time. Yeah, they've got an easy sort of weight they're using. So, yeah, you up the intensity there and then you move on and go, all right, well, that was just a warm-up set. You count that as a warm-up set and go, all right, let's get to an intensity that we want where you've only got like maybe 2-3 reps in reserve, and then go from there and start your working volume from there. So warm-up sets and sets that people are finding too easy, I don't really factor that into their volume of training. I just call that a warm-up set and go, all right, now we need to find what your intensity is. But I don't really have that sort of with my clients. I'm pretty in tune with my clients and I know what sort of volume they have to work at and what intensities. But yeah, that'd be a sure telltale sign.
Yeah, I love it. So I guess when we look at the history of training and strength training, especially in coaches' eyes, I think just a few years ago, we were talking lots about prescribing certain percentages, and that might have came out of, I think it was like Russian schools of strength training, but they would prescribe percentages of your one rep max, kind of like you suggested, like an 80% of your one rep max that you're training for, let's say, 5 reps. And then the next week, you're doing 90% of your one rep max and you're aiming for 3 reps and such. But then now we're starting to become more common to use auto-regulation, kind of what you said, like models like RPE, rate of perceived exertion, which is a scale of 1 to 10. And then on the flip side, we also can use reps in reserves, RIR, which is almost the inverse of it. So let's say you finish your set and you've identified that you could have done, let's say, 2 more reps. You would then call that a 2 RIR or 2 reps in reserve. And then in contrast, you could also call that an 8 RPE where, yeah, you got a few more. So I guess it sounds like it's almost easier in prescribing intensity to a client or to someone online, instead of saying, oh, do 80% of your 1 rep max, to do something like, oh, work at a 3 rep in reserve or a 2 rep in reserve, so that depending on the day that they're training, you know, they might've had a long day, their kid's sick, they're stressed out at work. So one day, 100 kilos feels really heavy, and then the week after, that 100 kilos might feel really light for them, and then we're adding and modifying their intensity along the way. But you probably do that intuitively by seeing a person in front of you. But let's say you were coaching someone online, how would you teach them what RPE is, or how do you explain to somebody what RPE is when you're first training them?
I usually find that RPE sort of work is for fairly experienced people that have been training for quite a while, because they sort of get what weights feel like and they kind of know how much they've got in reserve, whereas a newbie would really struggle to know. And to be quite honest, I was doing that style of programming just recently with my coach. And to be quite honest, even I found it really difficult in the early stages to know how much I had left in the tank. I'd sort of guesstimate as best as I could. But there are certain exercises like deadlifts where I would if I got to 250, when I get to about 250 kilos, my first rep feels like it's glued to the ground from 250, 260, 270, 280. So if I'm doing a single, it's hard for me to go, oh, I don't know if I had 2 left or 3 left or 10 left, because I have done all those in between. Do you know what I mean? I've got 250 and I've done about 10 reps before, whereas I've done 270 and got, you know, a few. It's really hard to do.
I've got like 1.5 reps in the tank. I don't know.
It's really hard to do with a certain lift. And I found that with deadlifts. But over time, you start to, obviously, because that's your way of improving each week and improving your workout at the time, you start to really get in tune with what you should be feeling and what sort of numbers you should be hitting and going for. So yeah, I find it's more for people that are fairly experienced in training to do that style of work, whereas I rather program most of my clients, I shouldn't say most, but the ones that aren't as experienced, with percentages like you're talking about before. But I do have a chart that I work off that does have RPE. It's an RPE scale. So I'll sort of look at that scale and go, well, if they work at 80% and they're aiming for 6 reps, they should have about 4 reps in reserve. So that's kind of where I want them to start that program on. Do you know what I mean? So I already work off a chart that sort of estimates what people's RPEs should be. So I kind of combine both without my client actually knowing that they're doing RPE work. I've kind of taken that guesswork out for them and said, well, if you're doing 80%, theoretically, you should be able to do 8 reps of that for maximum. And to do an RPE of 8, you should be getting about 6 reps out. So I'll program, you know, 80% at 6 reps. And I know they've got 2 reps in reserve, so they're not busting their ass and trying to do the 8 reps and go, why is this so hard? Do you know what I mean? Because we don't need to work to failure every time. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. You're completely right. Where someone who's brand new to the gym, there's a much higher rate of error when predicting their reps in reserve or RPE. And even advanced trainers like myself, I would go into a gym and I'm like, oh, I want to work at a 2 rep in reserve. And then you'd get to rep, I don't know, 10 on a bench press. And you're like, oh, do I have 2 more or do I have 3 more? I'm not quite sure. So it can be quite hard. I think if you want to start considering those qualitative factors and how it feels. It's really good as a reflective process at the end of the set, because I feel like a lot of people simply don't train anywhere near failure, as in they would be doing a 50% of their one rep max and then stopping at, you know, rep number 10 when they could easily do a lot more, or stopping, you know, 5 reps in reserve short from failure. So a really easy reflective process to do at the end of your set is to ask yourself, okay, how did that feel? How many reps could I have done if I just kept on going? Or just rating it out of 10 in terms of difficulty. I think it's very easy to say, oh, it was hard. That's an easy word to label it. But putting a number to it, saying, oh, it was maybe a 7 out of 10. I think you can't label something like a 7 out of 10 if you don't know what 10 out of 10 is. So if you haven't trained to maximal failure in a safe way, as in maybe under a machine that could keep you safe and train to absolute failure, you know what absolute failure is. And I'm sure if you had a PT or a buddy or you and I standing next to you telling you to do more and more and more, you probably find that you could do more and more and more. So I think people simply, just don't train anywhere near the failure.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Because I come from a powerlifting background, I guess we'd always be training with training buddies and stuff like that. And that was a really good way to work out what your RPEs were, because you might feel like that deadlift moved at 1K an hour, but they're like, man, that flew up. Do you know what I mean? And then they're like, you had 2-3 left there. And that's where it's good to have a training buddy as well that sort of knows the way you move, because in your head, you're like, man, that took forever to get to lockout or whatever. But they'll be like, nah, you did that at whatever speed you'd normally do and have 2 or 3 left up your sleeve. So you're like, yeah, okay, that makes sense then. You know what I mean? Having training partners that are pretty in tune with your training is a good way to sort of help you through those sort of things too.
Do you ever do that with the videos? Like, as in, would you take a video of yourself, watch your back and go, oh, that felt really hard, but you watch it and go, oh, that looked technically perfect, you know?
Yeah, that's another great way of doing it too. Yeah, I definitely record all my warm-ups, all my training sets, and then go, yep, that was easy, that much easier than it felt. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, that is a good way of doing it as well.
Yeah. Now, on the contrast, we talked a lot about intensity. When we're talking about volume, a common question that comes up in the challenge, and I guess people I've worked with, is always wanting to do more, either adding more sets to an exercise or adding more exercise to the total volume of the day. So can you speak a little bit about the idea of adding more and more volume and what effects that could have on your body or your training or your, I guess, progress through fitness and progression?
Yeah. Well, like you touched on, if people are able to keep adding more and more volume and they're wanting to add more and more sets or more and more reps, it's usually because they're not working hard enough like they should be. Yeah, their intensity isn't up. So, you know, intensity always comes back into it. But yeah, if you are working at a decent amount of volume, then you're not going to want to have to add more sets and reps all the time. But over time, if you just keep beating yourself up when you go to the gym and adding more and more volume, doesn't matter how you feel, how wrecked you are, and you're like, nah, I've got to add more volume this week, I've got to keep adding more volume, you just end up accumulating a lot of fatigue. And you can sort of start to go backwards over time, yeah? Because we do hit that point of overtraining, like I touched on earlier. The more and more volume you keep adding, it's just adding more and more stress to your body. And if you're already stressed outside of training with, you know, diet, sleep, work, all that sort of stuff, your body doesn't know the difference between sleep stress, between bicep curl stress, between squatting stress, between relationship stress, between poor diet. They're all stresses on the body. So your body doesn't sort of go, oh, I'll bottle that bicep stress over here and I'll bottle that, you know, home stress over here and I should be all right when I go to do squats because I'm not using either of those two other stresses. It's all a stress. They all accumulate. Then, yeah, the more and more volume you keep adding, and it goes past that maximum recoverable volume that I spoke about again, then yeah, you're going to start seeing diminishing returns. You're going to feel poorly. You're going to perform poorly in the gym. And yeah, you can go backwards. You can start losing muscle and gaining fat because of those stress levels go up and cortisol increases. And, you know, there's a myriad of things that happen. But yeah, does that cover what you meant?
Yeah. I think there's this idea where adding more equals more, right? Where, you know, if I do more exercise, that equals more results, whatever that means. Yes. When it's very much like a Goldilocks effect, where sometimes adding more can lead to diminishing returns, like you said, where we do get this inverted U shape where more ends up being less. And we kind of refer to this as junk volume sometimes, where the intensity becomes so low that you could keep doing more, but it's so low that you're not really putting a stimulus on your body, and then you're just simply wasting your time. For example, you could probably take someone through, a whole day worth of exercise, 8 hours, but that first half an hour, you could push them at higher intensities of, maybe 80% of their maximal effort. But then once you get to hour two, they're working so low that it's like, well, you might as well just go do some housework at home. That would be more stimulus on your body. And I think sometimes we fall into this trap where we go, oh, I need to do an hour worth of exercise because I did an hour worth of it last time. Or I did 20 sets of exercise. Now I need to do 25 sets of exercise because I heard volume is good for muscle growth or whatever. Then what happens is your intensity drops down, and then you're training with like 5 reps in reserve or 10 reps in reserve or really low intensities that you're not putting enough stimulus on your body, and then you're not really achieving anything.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, your body's not having to adapt.
Yeah, but then on the contrast, you can't expect to add weight on the bar every single week. I think that's
No.
Yeah. And let's say if you wanted to add 1 kilo a week to your squat, if you trained your squat once a week, then theoretically you're going to add 50 kilos in a year. So you train for 2 years, you can add 100 kilos to your squat. Okay, like for some people, you can add 100 kilos to your squat over 2 years. But if you're already squatting 300 kilos like yourself, you can't expect to add 100 kilos or a kilo every week. And I think that's not realistic.
Yeah. Training is not linear. Progress is not linear. Nothing's linear when it comes to training. There is nothing linear about it. You can go backwards real fast. Yeah.
So then we get in this balance between the two. We go, okay, we want to always increase the intensity, but sometimes we simply can't. And then sometimes we want to increase the volume, but then sometimes that will lead to a negative effect. So now we're in this like seesaw of, okay, well, what do I manipulate? Do I manipulate my volume or my intensity? So I guess, John, can you speak a little bit about that? Like, what would your approach be to, I guess, some of the people listening? If they have their program in front of them, what should they be aiming to do? Should they be wanting to increase their volume or increase their intensity?
Yeah, good question. And again, it's one of those depends type moments, I guess. Yeah, you can manipulate either and see what sort of works for you, I guess. But there's no clear-cut answer that I can think of right now. You sort of put me on the spot with that.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we've both used the model of repetition ranges. So let's say you have an exercise and the goal is to hit maybe 8 to 12 reps. That's the goal, and it's a range. So what we would instruct people to do is choose a weight where you can maybe get 8 reps in.
Yeah.
And then keep using that weight.
Try and increase that to 12 for over the next few weeks.
Yeah. And then once you can get to 12, then you increase the weight.
Increase the intensity.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And that's a progression model. And then I've recently come across another concept of double progression where you would have a set range and a rep range. So you might have 2 to 4 sets of, 8 to 12 reps. So sometimes you may find that you can hit 12 reps of a bench press for 2 sets, and then it drops down to maybe 10 reps on the bench press for the 3rd set. And then the 4th set, you can only get 4 reps. Okay. In that case, and in that model of training, we don't want you to increase the weight yet until you could do 4 sets.
12 on all 4 sets. Yeah.
And then increase the load, and then you start again. So then you're manipulating volume through sets and reps, and then you're manipulating your intensity through, I guess, that rep range as well. So that's when we get into more advanced models of progression. But you're right.
And I guess ultimately, all those models that you're talking about and all those ways of approaching that is ultimately people finding what their maximum recoverable volume is.
Yeah.
They'll try all those different methods and they'll see, how much volume they can handle, how much intensity they can handle at that volume. Mm-hmm. And before long, they're slowly finding out what their own maximum recoverable volume is, where they're getting good results, they're not overtraining or vice versa, do you know what I mean? So all those methods work, and that's what training's all about.
Yeah, I think every person is so individual. And we can start, we normally start with prescribing exercise with an idea of what good volume is. But at the end of the day, every person is going to be slightly different. And I think for me, a workout which has about 15 sets is a good starting point when I'm writing somebody a program. And then, of course, that can fluctuate up to 20 or sometimes even down to 10, depending on the person that I have in front of me. In terms of training volume for one workout, what kind of volumes would you be seeing in your individual programming and then some of the clients that you work with? What kind of ranges of volume are you working with?
For me, it depends on, it's a lot with periodization when it comes to powerlifting. As I get closer to competitions, there's more specificity and we want to just be getting good at doing one rep because that's all I've got to do in a competition and at a high intensity. So the volume decreases drastically as I get closer to comp when I'm starting to peak and stuff for comp, because all I'm trying to do is I'm trying to prime my body to get good at lifting a really heavy rate for one rep. So yeah, my volume decreases a lot come closer to comp and intensity increases drastically. But then at the flip side, after a comp, then I go to the stuff that kills you and it feels like cardio because you've been peaking for so long, and you start going to an hypertrophy block where, you know, you are doing your 8s and 10 reps and high volume and all that sort of stuff. And I couldn't even tell you how much, but volume can be up to, I don't know, maybe 40, 50 sets for me with certain body parts and whatever else. It's a lot. But then come close to the comp, I might only have to do 4 or 5 working sets and I'm spent. Yeah. You know what I mean? It absolutely exhausts you because it fries your nervous system. It's not just your muscles and stuff. It's a different sort of fatigue. So yeah, it can vary a lot. And there's so many factors that come into training volume and intensities for people. Like, you have to take into consideration their gender, their weight, their height, their strength, all that sort of stuff, their training experience, their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I try and get a feel for all that through my clients. And yeah, I've got formulas that I can actually put in that gives you a rough idea of how much volume you should be using for that particular person based on all those factors. So their gender, their height, their weight, their age, because you find, you know, females can usually handle a lot more volume than males can. They don't need as much rest between sets, all that sort of stuff. And it's generally just because they don't work at higher intensities like guys do, yeah? So not to say that girls aren't strong by any means or anything like that, but you're more likely to find guys that can squat 400 kilos and you're going to find girls that can probably max at 200-300 kilos, do you know what I mean? And things like that. So there's many factors that come into the way I program volume for clients and whatnot. So there's no one size fits all at all. It's very individualized for me, yeah.
I think even just that question of how much time do you have to train in a day versus how many times a week can you train? It drastically changes the volume prescription. Because if you had someone that could train for 3 hours any day of the week, okay, then you could make a plan for that. But if you have someone that can only commit 2 hours a week total, so 2 days a week of 1 hour of training, okay, then you'd have to prioritize and modify the volume there so that you can actually get some good overload. I guess from here, I just want to quickly touch on training to failure. I think that's was and might be common advice that you may hear in gyms, but the concept of training to failure would be to take a set to a 10 out of 10 RPE or a 0 RIR. Can you speak a little bit about how you would speak to someone about training to failure, if they should train to failure, how often they should train to failure, and then if there are any benefits of always training to failure?
Yeah, I think there's a time and place for that sort of stuff, definitely. Training to failure, I don't think needs to happen at every single exercise on every single workout of every single day. Sure, on some isolation exercise or something like that at the end of your session, yeah, go by all means, you know, thrash out your biceps or your hamstrings or whatever you're doing. But yeah, just going to that point where you're always just trying to go to absolute maximum at every exercise you do, the likelihood of you sustaining injury or something like that is greatly increased, because with maximal efforts, technique often breaks down by the end. You're doing sloppy reps and whatever else, and that's where people can hurt themselves. If you're doing that all the time as well, you can accumulate too much fatigue again, so which will diminish the returns that you get on the next workout, because you're going to be so sore from the previous one that you'll perform poorly on your next workout. Yeah, there's so many factors to say that you shouldn't do every exercise, every set, every, you know, workout to failure. But every now and then, it's a great way to stimulate a muscle into different adaptations and go, we're going to have to work really hard here. So yeah, you are going to get some good adaptations from it occasionally. Mm. So yeah, I do to failure every now and then with clients and stuff like that, you know, with drop sets or whatever else. But always keeping at forefront is technique with me. Yeah. As soon as I see someone's technique break down, I'm like, all right, that's enough. You stop that. I know you can do another 5 reps, but I don't want to injure you and then not have you as a client again and you're going to hate me or whatever. And, you know, you don't want to hurt your client. So there's a point where, yeah, you've got to sort of be sensible about it.
Yeah, yeah. Totally agree. I think first it really comes down to the definition of failure. So I guess we can almost describe it under maybe three umbrellas. So the first one would be like technical failure. So like you said, oh, you know, your technique breaks down, technical failure, you know, stop, you've had enough. The next one would be that idea of mechanical failure where, okay, let's say a really isolated movement like a bicep curl, you're curling, you're curling, you're curling, and then the biceps just can't do anymore. That would be like mechanical failure, which I guess is what we want to kind of chase.
That I want to get. Yeah.
And then there's that other one of like psychological failure, such as, you know, maybe you've got a really heavy load on your back, you're squatting, but then you kind of mentally give up. You go, oh, no, I've had enough. Where you technically were still fine, mechanically you're still fine, but your brain kind of said no, which I think maybe in the idea of endurance events that we're talking about, like let's say you're running a marathon, people are more likely to give up mentally before they physically break down or technical yes. different conversation. But yeah, so we can kind of talk about three main umbrellas.
Definitely.
But you would agree, I guess, when we see technical failure, we kind of want to stop because of risks of injury and such. Psychological failure, that would be a different conversation to have with someone. That might be how stimulated they are or if they're present in the gym in the moment.
Yeah.
The mechanical failure is what we want to...
What we're chasing.
Chasing. And I think in that context, it's still, it depends. And without getting too nerdy, when we talk about muscle protein synthesis, we see a very linear increase in muscle protein or the development of muscle from about 4 reps in reserve. So there's a quite a linear relationship. But then once we go from 4 reps reserve, 3 reps in reserve, 2 reps reserve, 1 rep reserve, that kind of actually flattens out a little bit. So we can actually see very, very similar muscle adaptations if we have someone stopping at about 4 reps in reserve or even going to failure. But inversely, we see a very exponential increase in fatigue for someone getting closer and closer to failure. So then we start to question that overlapping of, okay, we could theoretically get the most muscle growth if we stop at 4 reps in reserve versus 1 rep in reserve. But if we get closer to 1 rep in reserve or 0 reps in reserve, we get a very, very drastic increase in stimulus. So you said it perfectly where we go, oh, maybe we don't want to take every single set to failure because that's just going to exponentially increase our levels of fatigue, our recoverability, and then our overall affecting our MRV like you were talking about earlier. But then way back in our conversation, we were saying that people simply don't train anywhere near their absolute mechanical failure. So even in that sense, if you walk away from this podcast and go, oh, Steve and John were telling me to stop at 4 reps in reserve, I don't even think you're getting anywhere near 1 rep in reserve or 0 reps in reserve. I don't think you've ever experienced a 0 rep in reserve. And you might not experience that unless you had someone yelling at you to do another squat because you probably have a few more reps in you.
Yeah.
So I guess my recommendation would be to aim for that 1 to 2 rep in reserve so that you're getting close to your perceived level of failure. And then, like you suggested, maybe 1 or 2 sets that are mostly what I would call safer exercises. So maybe not like a deadlift pattern or a heavy squat pattern, maybe something like a leg extension or a leg press, something that is a little bit more controlled and safe, and taking that movement to failure. Because it's all that safety that's important as well.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, 100%.
But I think some people get obsessed with always trailing to failure and that leads to a plateau because they're simply putting too much stress on their body. They can't recover from it.
Yeah.
And then in the other spectrum, people getting nowhere near failure where they want to add more and more volume.
Yeah, well, I just had a new client come to me recently, actually. He was really surprised when I just gave him X amount of reps and X amount of sets to do. He's like, when do I go to failure?
Yeah.
Because that's all he's ever done.
Yeah.
He goes to failure on almost every exercise. So it's so far, he's halfway into the block and I think he's really enjoying it and seeing good improvements. So I'm really going to be interested to see how he's found this block and get that feedback because, yeah, I haven't had someone that's been like that in quite a while, whereas, yeah, to see how he's going to adapt this way where he's not always going to failure to, you know, just doing prescribed rep sets that I've given him and see what the changes are.
Mm.
And, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, sometimes it's a real shift in mindset when we prescribe a program that might not look like the program a client was training earlier.
Yeah.
Right? So you may have someone that was used to doing 50 sets of arm work and they'll be at the gym for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And they come to you and they're like, oh, I want to build muscle. And you kind of look at it and you're like, whoa, like you were really doing this before. And then you kind of take it back to basics. But then what you find is just bringing it back to basic training principles, we see such amazing results.
And I'd say it's just a change in stimulus that can lead to better results, yeah? And the same flip side, yeah, if I start to do a few extra sets to failure here and there, I'm sure I'm going to see benefits from that too because I haven't done that in a while. So, yeah, there's a time and place for everything. And that's where you do periodized programming so that you do sections of your workouts or you periodize, you know, throughout the year where you are doing lots of work, lots of volume, high intensity, blah, blah, blah. You're always shifting and changing so that your body's always having to shift and change in a positive way as well.
I love it. I love it. Look, John, let's wrap it up there, mate. You know, we've kind of talked a lot about intensity and volume. And if someone had any questions about their own program and their volume and their intensity and approaches, and they wanted to ask you a question, how could they get in contact with you?
Probably the easiest way to get in contact with me is through Instagram, @onemorerep. It's my handle there. Or if they're on the Facebook Max's and Maxine's page, then by all means there as well. But yeah, usually Instagram. If you hit me up on Instagram, I'm always on that. So yeah, you can just shoot me a message there and I'm happy to help and chat.
Awesome, John. Thank you so much for being on another episode of the Challenge Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Cheers, mate.
Thanks for listening, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend or leave us a review on iTunes to help us spread the good word.
See you next time.